Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky on the hotline. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Greg. Hey, tell me, how were the mosquitoes at Williams Lake this year?
I'll tell you, today they were ugly.
Oh, my goodness. We have a couple of bat houses that I've installed here in the yard to, for the purpose of controlling mosquitoes. And for years, we've had just minimal mosquitoes. But this year, for heaven's sakes, they just about carry me away.
Yeah, normally they don't get in the building, but they found a loophole today.
Boy, oh boy.
There's a couple big ones have been chasing me around here. Hey, I had a senior moment. I got to go back because I got a couple calls here. I said gas was $2.12, and it was. Don't rush out to the gas station.
I was going to ask you that question because I was about ready to jump in and take all my gas cans and go fill up. So,
I shouldn't have said anything. $3.12, $3.14, the gas. So.
You said the famous words, I shouldn't have said anything. I've considered that on occasion.
Hey, you were under the Oaks this week. How did that go, Mike?
Oh, my goodness. It was fantastic. The energy was palpable. People were having a very good time. It was an absolutely focused celebration on that day in 1854 when people from multiple parties, listen to this, multiple parties gathered together to combine and create what is now called the Republican Party, and all focused around not their differences, but what they concurred and agreed on. And it's a fantastic object lesson for all of us to learn, and that is that they were Democrats, they were freemen, there were a number of parties that were all created because they had differences. But they came together on a common cause, and that was to create a party that would really put a nail in the coffin on this thing called slavery and not let it expand across our nation, and then put an end to it eventually when President Lincoln was able to do so. So we had it was a terrific celebration. Jackson has a wonderful piece in that history. And then our keynote speaker was former police chief James Craig from Detroit, and he gave a wonderful, rousing speech on how he sees the world, how he sees Michigan, how he sees America, and what we and all the kinds of things that we cherish and the kinds of things we need to be concerned about. And so I believe just about everybody left there feeling good about the investment of their time and also feeling good about what the words they heard from former Chief Craig.
I'm sure you've talked to him. Why hasn't he declared yet?
I have talked to him, yes, indeed. And I've talked to a number of other people who are also contemplating running for governor. It's, you know, the strategy there in general is you don't want to announce too soon. You want to make sure you have a team in place. You want to make sure you've done your homework. Quite frankly, you want your friends to vet you to make sure that there's not some things there that you may have forgotten or don't interpret as the public would and have those kinds of things revealed, you know, privately. I mean, there's all kinds of things behind waiting until the right moment. I think it'll be fall before anybody, you know, really engages and announces things. But he clearly talked like he was very interested.
Yeah, no question about that. It looks like there's at least, what, a half dozen?
Yeah, and I'm sure there are some that we don't even know about yet. Republicans are famous for energetic, sharp elbows and sharp tongue primaries, and may the best man or woman come out of them. And I don't think this year is going to be any exception to that. It's a good, healthy process. Sometimes it's a little ugly to watch, and it's even uglier to participate in, but it's a vetting process that I think is healthy in the net.
You see a dark horse contender out there?
Not yet. There's a couple that are contemplating it that I'm not at at right to reveal them. But like I said, be patient. This is, I think, by 1st of October we'll have a pretty clear picture of who is sincere and running and who may not be.
Well, earlier this week we had Brandy Bennett. She has a home health care business, also a transport business. And Mike, she was literally in tears here over this, new insurance law and how it is affecting home health care businesses. And I'm sure that's going to be a bigger issue here going forward. What do you think?
Well, I think that with the changes we made that were necessary and are now making it more affordable for tens of thousands of people to get insurance that they never could afford before, word and are disruptive, and it's going to take some time to work through those things. I've stayed in close contact with providers, and I've stayed in equally close contact with insurers. They're all committed to working through the changes. Doesn't surprise me that something of this magnitude has some bumps in it. The gal that you had on would probably characterize it as much more impactful than bumps. I just hope that she and others that are listening are aggressive in contacting insurers and establishing contracts directly with them. The notion that people need to be reimbursed for what is customary and reasonable is not lost in this reform. Nobody wants anybody to go out of business, and DIFs and the MCAA, MCC are primed and ready, as well as are the insurance companies, to make sure that nobody falls through the cracks. But it is a bumpy road, and unfortunately, Greg, and this is another reality. A lot of people waited, to the last minute to start making changes, and that's why it's it looks like it's a bit of a rush right now.
But I don't know. Did this happen too fast? Why weren't some of these people who needed the assistance grandfathered in somehow?
Everybody's grandfathered in for lifetime benefits. Just that it's not necessarily grandfathered in for at the same level of reimbursement as they were getting before. Now, that law is very clear on that. And to your exact question about should we have allowed more time, we allowed the legislation and the change that was signed by the governor, this was a very bipartisan effort, allowed 2 years for this transition to occur.
Mm-hmm.
I know that seems like a long time ago, but it was back in 2019. And so this pathway and the pavement pavers were being laid 2 years ago. And so, the old student syndrome is, every project takes exactly as long as the amount of time you allow it to take. I mean, if we had said the 4-year implementation, it probably still would have been the last minute before people really, embraced it and stuff. So we're paying very close attention, and if there are changes that need to be made, I'd like to make them based on real data, not just speculation. And so I know, again, that comment is not going to be satisfactory to some of your listeners that are right in the middle of the change, but we're not ignoring it, and that we're watching closely.
Yeah, she had to her transport business. She had to pretty much shut it down. And these were people that were taking some of these critical care patients to Ann Arbor for treatment. She had to shut the whole business down and lay everybody off. And she told me of at least 20 businesses, home health care, that have had to close. Is this something, Mike, that can... I know Lansing moves slowly. Can this get rectified expediently?
So, Greg, I'm going to do something that if my staff were listening, they'd probably put their hair on fire. But I'm going to ask you to contact the gal that you were talking about that was on your show.
Mm-hmm.
And give her, don't put it on the radio now.
No.
But you go ahead and give her my contact information, and I'd love to talk with her.
Okay. very good. What's this investigation, Mike, by the Attorney General and I guess the Michigan State Police? Are Republicans really seeking this about false information in the 2020 election?
Another one of my favorite sayings is you always find what you're looking for. You always find what you're looking for. And I stand solidly behind this report. People are slicing and dicing words and phrases and sentences and paragraphs in it and choosing to interpret them in the way that benefits whatever their message is. This report did not call upon the AG to do an investigation. It called upon the AG to consider doing such for those who the AG in any kind of initial investigation might determine that they're doing it for the wrong reasons. And so it's not a Senate-driven investigation. The Attorney General, I believe, any Attorney General, have a high level of professional expectancy in terms of they don't do an investigation unless they've done a preliminary one to determine whether there's something there of substance or not. I have no clue as to whether RAG has done that, and I have no clue of what she may or may not have found. But it was also clear in our report that came out of the Senate Oversight Committee that we don't maintain and represent that it's a comprehensive report. It is comprehensive to the information, investigation, and evidence that was presented to the committee. And there may be more things to disclose, but the committee didn't find anything of substance that would have had a material effect on the outcome of the election. The committee did find many things that were vulnerabilities, that were incorrectly done. Our Secretary of State sending out applications, unsolicited applications for absentee ballots was very problematic. So those kinds of things were discovered, and we've actually submitted legislation to fix and close some of those circles and some of those loopholes to provide people confidence that the elections do have integrity and they should have confidence to vote. The last thing we want is people to not have confidence in the voting and election process and not participate, because that's what we need. And so that's the truth of what you're reading and hearing. And this notion that for some reason somebody can conclude the report infringes upon freedom of speech rights is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. There's nobody saying you can't have your own opinion and you can't express your own opinion. But I believe, in particular, what has been reported repeatedly about Antrim County, a small, very delightful county in northern Michigan, where a clerk made a poor decision to save some money, and it resulted in, scrutiny and outside reviews ad nauseum. Mm-hmm. Only to conclude that it was a mistake that was tried to be corrected and then wasn't corrected in the correct way in the first attempt, but ultimately it was. The machine counts and the paper counts have been checked and rechecked. They all still match.
Yeah.
And so highlighting, magnifying, and amplifying in misrepresenting what actually happened in Antrim County to save $7,000, by the way, I believe is having incalculable value of damage across not just Michigan, but our nation in how it's being represented. I know those are strong words, but I believe it. This is my freedom of speech now, based on my own assessment of the data and the information available. And so that's the reality of it. And some people don't want to hear that because, like me, I wanted a different outcome in this last election. But that's not what happened.
Yeah. My question, was there a request by the committee for an investigation?
No.
Okay.
No. No. The comment in the report was the AG should consider whether or not an investigation should be made.
Okay.
And that's it. That's it. There was no request for an investigation.
That explains it. we'll let you get to the golf course.
Well, I just might do that, Craig. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Take care. Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey.